Good afternoon. My guest this afternoon is Tom Elliott. Do you remember Tom Elliott? Tom Elliott was once the leader of a political party. Now he's a free man. The shackles have been removed. And now that he's had some time to reflect on the post-leadership situation and the termination of his leadership, I thought it appropriate that I should sit down and talk with Tom, formally, informally, and try to get a sense of the man, because an awful lot of the man that I knew over the years didn't emerge during his leadership. So, Tom, you're very welcome, and thank you for joining MMLE.com this afternoon. What's it like not being a party leader?
Well, I think we must remember that I actually served as a non-party leader for a number of years in the Ulster Unionist Party, and in particular as an MLA at the Assembly here. So it's nothing new to me not to be party leader. I will still be very busy. I am a very active MLA within the constituency, and indeed in whatever committees I serve on. People will know that they will get their money's worth from Tom Elliott.
Fair enough, Tom, but let's be realistic about it. You live in Fermanagh. When you were leader, you were up and down that road from Fermanagh to Belfast and Belfast to Fermanagh like a yo-yo, 5 days a week, sometimes more. Like, I mean, you say, surely things have changed against the backdrop of your non-leadership position now.
There is no question about it that things have changed, and not being leader means that you don't have the same internal party mechanisms to deal with on a constant basis. And I really do mean constant, because in our party we didn't have the cover, we didn't have the deflection that most other large parties would have, whereby they have people surround them and cushion a lot of the internal party mechanisms. The Ulster Unionist Party don't have that by and large, and that's why the leader is the front line all the time.
How hurt were you, Tom, when you were more or less castigated, challenged, sanctioned for attending the funeral of Ronan Kerr, the young Catholic police officer who was killed by dissident Republicans? How offensive was that to you? Or was it offensive that the Orange Order, your parent order as such, should seek to sanction you?
Well, we need to be mindful that it wasn't actually the Orange Order that attempted to sanction me. It was one lodge.
It was still Orange Order, no matter where you put it.
It was one lodge that brought a charge against Danny Kennedy and I. But I do have to say, I was somewhat disappointed. But the fact was, it never crossed my mind that I would not attend the funeral of a murdered police officer, that I would not pay respects to that family and to the memory of the person that was murdered, irrespective of who that was. I wasn't in two minds about that. I never have been, and I never will be. And I must say, and I hope it never happens again, I hope I'm never in that position again, but if I was, I would do the same thing again, whether I was leader of the Ulster Unionist Party or not.
Tom Elliott, you're no longer leader of the party. Were you knifed in the back within your party? Because that's the popular consensus out there. We came across in the media, you were knifed. Were you knifed by your own people?
I think we need to put it in some context, and that is that some people throughout Northern Ireland never gave me a fair chance from when I became leader. Some of those people were indeed in the party, and I recall the very first day after I was elected leader of the party, one individual demanded that I do certain things and he would resign if I didn't, and he did resign.
Who was that?
Well, that was Trevor Ringland on the morning after I became leader, and those were absolute silly demands, I have to say. But there were other people, even some of the media circles, never gave me a fair chance. There's one particular paper that I believe hardly gave me one positive write-up, hardly gave me one positive contribution during my time as leadership, even though I met the editor, I met the journalists, and still they failed to give me
but
any
Tom,
reasonable
it wasn't
recognition.
The newspaper, it wasn't the editor, it wasn't that journalist that ultimately did for you. Who did for you in the party? Was it the John McAllisters of this world? Was it the Basil McRae's? Was it the McGimpsies? I mean, you see, these are people within your party who did for you.
I think we need to be mindful. What I'm trying to say is there was a combination of issues. Some of those issues were external, and probably the most influential of them were external to the party. People who had a constant agitation towards me, people who had a constant negative message against me, and then obviously that allowed the few people who were determined within the party internally to try to make sure that I didn't proceed as leader to do that. But I think that was a small part of it, and they were only able and allowed to do that because of the external difficulties.
But hold on, Tom. What was the straw that broke the camel's back? What ultimately decided? Surely because a few people were sniping at you from the wings within the party didn't decide for you to quit the leadership of the party. Surely you're a bigger man than that. What ultimately decided?
Well, there was a combination of issues, and I have actually said about the external media consistent approach that was opposed to me. And then obviously there was that small groups of individuals within the party.
Well, are we talking about Basil McRae, John McAllister, who had a contrary view, who wanted to go into opposition? Was that all part of the mix?
No, I don't think individual policy issues were part of it at all, because those are things that I, as a politician, and other members of the party actually debate and discuss. And
okay, but there weren't policy issues, then what was it then?
Well, there was a continual briefing from some members of the party, and obviously some parts of the media were content to pick up on that, to run with it.
What was the worst, Tom? There's been a lot of general talk about this, but what specifically were people briefing about? What were people specifically briefing, which was so deleterious, so militating against you, that decided for you to fall for the leadership of a party?
Well, you're a journalist, Eamon, and I don't know whether you heard any of these issues, and I know you weren't one of the ones that had come to me on a regular basis, but some of the others had, and obviously they were being specifically referred to. And a lot of the briefings wasn't just against me. It was making other members of the party uneasy. It was saying things actually about other members of the party that was supposed to be coming from me, that there was absolute no truth in it at all. And then that was making other members of the party, and in particular assembly members, uneasy, and obviously it was leaving a fairly difficult atmosphere.
Yeah, but to many people out there, the brutality with which you stood David McNary down seemed to be quite an extreme action from you. Was he public enemy number one, as far as you were concerned, within the party, to the extent that you felt compelled to nail him, to actually suspend him as such?
I think we need to be clear, I didn't suspend
him. I accept that, but you stood him down effectively from his position as vice chair of the Education Committee.
I think we need to put that in some reality. I stepped David McNary down as vice chair of the Education Committee. Just today, I've been stood down as chairman of the committee of the Office of First and Deputy First Minister, a position that I've
held. But new kings make new laws. We're not really talking parallel with parallel here.
You stood
David McNary down for a specific reason. What was it that he did that was so outrageous, given that you were party to those talks with other people? Why was David McNary so punished?
I think we need to put it in context, and what I'm trying to do is do that,
right,
and then we'll get on to the overall subject. I have been stood down today as chair of OFM-DFM committee.
Are you now?
You don't see me running off and having a go at the party leader because of that. What I'm doing is I'm accepting that as part and process of politics. I'm a politician. I'm a big man who can take those things. I stood David McNary down as vice chair of the Education Committee because, and this is no secret, because he had went to the media and said things, some of them which were inaccurate, to be fair, some of them which were accurate, but the point was he had no right to go to the media and explain those issues, either the inaccurate ones or indeed the accurate ones, without the authority. It wasn't because we had any meetings with the DUP, because I had already told my assembly group that. I had already told my party officers and the party executive.
Didn't you tell them when the horse had bolted? Isn't that part of the problem? You didn't tell them before they should have known, effectively. It's only when you were in the corner that you told them. Wasn't that an unfactual situation?
That is inaccurate, Eamon.
Right, okay, correct.
I had actually told the party executive before that. I had told the party officers on a number of occasions when I had meetings and what the meetings were about, and I had told my assembly group. So there was no issue about that whatsoever.
When Peter Robinson went public in an interview with Ken Reid on UTV and said that the relationship was much better with you as party leader, and that an awful lot of issues had sort of reconciled themselves, effectively it wasn't Peter Robinson blowing your cover in terms of the new relationship that was emerging between the Democratic Unionist Party and the Ulster Unionist Party?
Absolutely not, because the relationship that we had on an individual basis may have been better, but on some fundamental issues we still disagreed, still disagree, and I think that's accepted. What I had done was try to ensure that on some specific issues we would try to see if there was any common ground, and those issues in particular were over the review of the Justice Ministry and over the boundary review. The boundary review we've got no agreement whatsoever on.
Tom, was it David McNary, with your blessing, who initiated the contact with the Democratic Unionist Party? Or did you initiate that contact?
That contact was initiated, I suppose, by a number of sources. I myself had actually meetings with the DUP leader, Peter Robinson, on a number of occasions, so I wouldn't say there was an initiation. I suppose David McNary, yes, did have some meetings. Some of them were authorised by myself, some of them weren't authorised by myself, but he had meetings with certainly DUP staff members.
But had he your blessing for all the conversations he had about a potential relationship with the Democratic Unionist Party, or was he going solo?
He had my blessing, there's no doubt about it, as had others, for discussions with the DUP and other parties on various issues, on specific issues. So there's no question about that, as had other members of the party as
right.
well.
Let me ask you something. Did you ever reach the point where you as party leader, with your delegation, were sitting in the same room with Peter Robinson and his delegation? Did you ever reach that formal position where you were delegates to delegates with party leader engaged in serious discussions about this new emerging relationship?
No, not at all. There were a number of meetings. I attended some meetings one-to-one with Peter Robinson over specific issues. At some other times there were other party members, but there were no formal delegation.
Okay, but did you ever get to the point where you were sitting down with David McNary, for example, on your side, and Peter Robinson with Sammy Wilson or somebody on his side? Did you ever get to that point of seriousness?
No, there was never any degree of that at all. The talks were mainly informal and were on specific issues.
Well, what was the ultimate goal of those talks, Tom?
Well, the goal actually was on an ongoing basis to try and determine if we as in the Ulster Unionist Party could come out of some negotiations in a better position than we may have been in. And obviously one of them in particular was around the Justice Ministry review, because I recognised that both at St Andrews talks and indeed at the Hillsborough talks, the Ulster Unionist Party were pretty much sidelined. We weren't part of that formal discussions whatsoever. So I wanted to change that, and I wanted to make sure that the Ulster Unionist Party would come out of it with the best decision that they could.
Mr. Ailey, did you ever envisage a situation where there might be a merger? Would you have supported a merger? Do you support a merger, an absorption of the Ulster Unionist Party into the Democratic Unionist Party, into a single Unionist Party? Could you buy into that?
I could never foresee the time that there would be a single Unionist Party, that there would be a merger between the Ulster Unionist Party and the DUP, and certainly not that there would be the absorbing of the Ulster Unionist Party into the DUP. There was no way that I could ever see that.
Are you saying that you at no point ever considered allowing the Ulster Unionist Party to be aligned, merged, integrated, absorbed into the Democratic Unionist Party?
I think that would be very fair to say. What I was doing was, I was always there on the basis that I would get the best for the Ulster Unionist Party that we could. And if that wasn't possible, then it wasn't possible. But we talked to other parties, and like we probably met with the SDLP leader more frequently than we did with the DUP leader.
Tom, if you're so, I wouldn't say blasé, but casual about these inter-dialogue, inter-discussions with the Democratic Unionists and the Ulster Unionist Party, why did this issue become such a big issue in the ranks of your party? Why were those that emergency meeting called? And I understand it turned out to be a very raucous meeting prior to your suspending or standing David McNary down as the vice chairperson of the Education Committee. What was the raw nerve within your party over those talks, which ultimately resulted in David McNary being stood down as vice chair of the Education Committee?
Well, I don't want to go into the internal mechanisms or discussions within our party meetings, because obviously there are enough people within the party to do that without me doing it. But clearly there was no emergency meeting called. There was an extra meeting called because we didn't have time to discuss.
Yeah, but you can sanitise these things. You know what I mean? So you call and meet a meeting at 12:45. David McNary didn't turn up. That was the second meeting that day. Now, what was it, though, that emerged that was so offensive that decided for you, right? Okay, was it David McNary's talking about the possibility of an Ulster Unionist being a Deputy First Minister or what? Was that the straw that broke the camel's back on that issue?
Eamon, what I was going to say there before I was so rudely interrupted by you...
I can cope with that.
...is that we had a meeting on the Tuesday morning. Obviously, the business starts early on a Tuesday morning, and we didn't have time to discuss the issue, so I agreed to, that we should come back at lunchtime and have the discussion. The discussion was not about having talks with the DUP. The discussion was basically about why David McNary had went publicly to the media on the issue, and that's what it centred around. I had then given opportunity to discuss the matter with David privately, and he had asked for the opportunity to discuss it with the party chairman, and I allowed that time and facilitation to do that.
But why, ultimately, you stepped down as party leader, Tom. Does anyone really know why you quit? You said that people were briefing the media against you and people were saying things and they were briefing against other people, but is that enough? Is that enough? Was that sufficient for you to step down as leader of this party? You didn't become leader for the good of your health. You had an ambition. You saw yourself with a capacity to change. What happened to you personally that decided for you, I can't go on with this nonsense?
I think I've explained...
Who knifed you?
I think I've explained, Eamon, that there were a series of events. And obviously, if you're so much prohibited from carrying out the function that you're prepared to do, and there were a lot of issues that I would have liked to have seen through. There was a lot of issues I didn't even get started in the party, simply because I was dealing with the minutiae of difficulties within the party. So I felt I was being inhibited, both externally and internally, from progressing those issues because I was dealing with so much of the minutiae. So I felt that it may be better to have a clean break and allow someone else the opportunity to take on their mantra.
But we know all the personalities, the key personalities in your party. Were they willfully throwing spanners on the work to inhibit, to block your achieving what you wanted to achieve?
Well, I'm sure there were some people.
Give me an example.
I think there were some people.
Give me an example, Tom, so that people understand.
Well, I don't think it's fair for me to...
But you're the man. You're the one who resigned over this. I mean, say, historians would like to know these things. I'm sure the community would like to know.
I think it very unfair that I would do it in the public domain like this, but I know at the current time, I have a researcher actually in Fermanagh going back through all the history books in Fermanagh and all the minute... books of Fermanagh Unionist Association, Fermanagh South Tyrone Unionist Association, and indeed of the Ulster Unionist Party, which are throwing up many issues that I was totally unaware of and others within the party. And maybe someday people will read what the main issues were within the Ulster Unionist Party at that time.
But Tom, let's just crystallise this though. Do you feel that somebody knifed you in the back as a party leader? That rendered your position totally untenable?
I feel there were a series of issues both externally and internally.
Which was more deleterious to you, external or internal?
Well, the external ones obviously were the ones that were much more constant. The internal ones were probably in the last few weeks were much more difficult. But one fed off the other. So clearly it was a combination of both.
Clearly David McNary is a very hurt man. He's a very sore man. He feels that he has been wronged. He feels that you had full awareness and familiarity with all his engagements with the Democratic Unionist Party. And at the end of the day, his contention would be that you shafted him, that you did not stand by your own involvement in those talks, and you threw him to the wolves. Is there any validity attaching to that?
I always stood by my own process. I stood by what I was involved in. There was no issue around that. I stood by what David McNary was involved in. The reason why I stood him down as Deputy Chair of the Education Committee, let's not forget, didn't expel him from the party, didn't even suspend him from the party, didn't even suspend him from the Assembly group. David McNary was still quite at liberty to be part of the Assembly group. He chose not to be. The reason that I stood him down was because he had went to the media and express those issues.
What was so offensive about what he said? Like, I mean, he said, what was so offensive? I read the text. What really sort of stung you?
And he expressed those issues without the authority of either me or the party.
But Tom, what stung you? What stung you so badly?
I think it was the aspect that he actually went to the media and said these things. And I think that's basically why. Look, this party has been dogged with discipline. It's quite interesting, actually. David accepted himself at a group meeting that we had just a short time before that, that he was part of the disciplinary problem that we had. So this party has been dogged with discipline issues for years. Many of them are almost hidden. They're covert disciplinary issues, and those are very difficult to deal with. But once people come out in the open, I suppose that they're easier to deal with. But what I tried to do was give David some punishment without being too severe. And you're saying that David's a very hurt person. So am I. I have to say, some of the things that have come out since are totally out of the question altogether. And as someone that I treated as a friend, I'm hugely disappointed. I haven't reacted to those issues whatsoever. It would be easy for me to react to them, but I'm not going to.
Do you feel somewhat betrayed then by David McNary because you deemed him a friend? You say he was a friend. Do you feel, against the backdrop of what he said, that he's betrayed you up to a point?
Well, of course I feel to a large degree betrayed by David, but that was his choice, and I'm not one for dwelling on those things, so I move on.
Could I just ask you finally, because there's a curiosity about this as well, you know, where you stood on the leadership. Did you feel from the outset that Mike Nesbitt always wanted to be the leader of this party? Did you think he was hovering over your shoulder at all since you becoming leader?
I must say, Mike was very supportive of myself as leader. He was very supportive in the run-up to the leadership contest, and he was actually very supportive during my time as leader. That doesn't say that we didn't have differences of opinion. We did. We had differences of opinion on issues, but the one good thing is we had those discussions, we had those debates, and once they were over, that was it. We got on, and he supported the decisions that were taken.
Tom, when it came to the leadership, where did you stand on that leadership? John McAllister in one corner and Mike Nesbitt in the other corner. Where did you personally stand?
Well, I think I made it quite clear at the time that it would have been unfair for me as the outgoing leader.
But we always hear that. But usually people gravitate towards one or the other. Did you gravitate towards either?
No, I think I was quite clear. I didn't gravitate.
Did you pack the buses?
What we done in Fermanagh South Tyrone was ensure that we brought people down to vote for the Ulster Unionist Party, to vote for the new leader, whoever that was going
to
be.
So, Tom, saying to me, Tom, point did you ever suggest, imply, indicate to your good faithful, to your party faithful in Fermanagh, I really fancy this by Nesbitt, you know, why don't we, he's slick, Mr. Slickter, let him have a go. Did you ever imply that to them?
I think we have to be absolutely clear. I spoke to a number of people from Fermanagh and South Tyrone who came on those buses. Some of them were actually supporting Mike Nesbitt. Some of them were actually supporting John McAllister.
Actually, I know that for a fact
and,
myself.
And I had no difficulty with any of that. But what we did was made sure that in Fermanagh and South Tyrone, that the people couldn't just say that those people came out to support Tom Elliott in 2010. We brought those people and ensured that they came to support the Ulster Unionist.
Tom, did you vote for either John McAllister or Mike Nesbitt on the day?
I put my voting slip into the box without anything on it.
Was that a big decision for you?
It was, yes. But it wasn't a difficult decision, but I thought it unfair that I would cast a vote simply because I felt that it was more appropriate that I stayed neutral.
How do you feel now? I mean, you see, you were a party leader. Do you feel a bit of a dog's body around the place here in Parliament Buildings now?
No, I think Tom Elliott will get on with his work, as he always will do. Tom Elliott will not be scarce of work. He will certainly put his mind to whatever he's asked to do. And the one thing about Tom Elliott is you can always expect loyalty from him.
Is there a future for this party, Tom? You've tried to reform this party. You came up against a mountain of resistance. You quit as party leader. Is Mike Nesbitt going to face the same problem, do you think?
Of course there is a future for the Ulster Unionist Party. And other parties have been at a low position in the past as well. You only have to look at the Conservatives in 1997, or indeed the Labour Party throughout 1979, right through the 80s. They were a very poor position. Fine Gael in the Republic of Ireland have been in a very, very difficult position. I recall meeting a delegation from Fine Gael led by Enda Kenny at that time in Parliament buildings here a few years ago, and they just had a really rough week where I think there was a motion of no confidence maybe in the leader at that stage, and they were really, really down at that stage, and they came back up very quickly.
Tom Elliott, I just want to say thank you for accommodating me on emanmally.com this afternoon, and good afternoon.
Thank you very much.